Hello and welcome to The Addicted Austenite, your one-stop podcast for all things Jane Austen. I'm Catherine and today I have more historical context for you. I'm going to be talking about the French Revolution. Jane Austen has a much more direct link to the French Revolution than she did, for example, to our topic last week, which was the Australian penal colony, which she had a connection if you kind of squinted and it was all sort of if this had happened, she would have, or so on and so forth. This week, the connection is a lot more solid, and I'm going to talk about that at the end of the episode. But first, let's have a look at what actually happened during the French Revolution. To kick us off, I want to have a look at the situation in France immediately prior to the beginning of the revolution so that we can understand what has caused it and why it's happening. In short, the situation is not good. And there are sort of three main reasons why the population is in such a state that they start this revolution. And that is social structure, money, and food. First of all, the social structure. Now, you might have heard of this phrase before, but what historians use to describe the social system in France at this time is the Ancien Régime. And this was a system that split French society into three groups. The first estate, who were all the clergy in the country. Religion was very, very important at this time, and the clergy had a very powerful position in society. The second estate was the nobility, so kings and queens and dukes and all those very, very posh people. And the third estate was everybody else. And the problem with this system was that, as with so many class structures, there was a lot of social injustice. In terms of numbers, the third estate was the largest. Obviously, it's everybody except for the clergy and the nobility. So the first and second estates are really actually quite small, but because they are the clergy and the nobility, they have a lot more money and a lot more power. So they are the ones that benefit the most. We've seen it time and time again with class structures all over the world that the top 1% benefit from the misery of the 99% beneath them. And this was causing a lot of problems in France because the everyday French citizens were really, really suffering. And this leads into the next two reasons, money and food. In terms of money, France was in dire financial straits. The nation itself actually went bankrupt because they had so little money. And why didn't they have any money? Well, mostly because of all the wars that were going on. We saw in our episode on the American Revolution that we'd just come out of the 8 Years' War between France and Britain and other world countries. And then the French actually helped the Americans during their revolution. They sent soldiers and supplies because the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of situation going on between France and England during that revolution. So France really didn't have a lot of money because they just spent so much on war and they didn't get many rewards out of that war. So they're really suffering, they really need money. They are taxing the population, but it's not enough, particularly because the burden of the taxes is falling majorly on the third estate. So these are the poorest members of society. I mentioned that the third estate was like 99% of the population who weren't the nobility and the clergy, and they were a lot poorer than the nobility and the clergy, but because of the first and second estates' positions and power, they weren't being taxed. They were finding ways to get around it. So the people with actual money that could actually help the country weren't contributing. So it was left to the third estate, who just did not have the money to support an entire nation. They couldn't support their own families, let alone their country. And this financial crisis, no pun intended, feeds into the issues that the country was having with food as well. Obviously, when the economy is bad, everybody suffers because there's not enough money to produce things, to sell them and to buy them. So there was a food shortage in that sense, but also France had been experiencing some really bad weather over the last few years, and it meant that there was very poor crop yields as well. So not only could people not afford the food that there wasn't actually a lot of food anyway. Again, the people that suffered the most from this was the third estate, because they're giving all their money in taxes and they can't grow the food that they need, and any food that they do grow is being bought by the first and second estates, who still have money to buy things because they're not paying taxes. So as you can see, French society really isn't a mess at this point. They really are at the lowest point that they've been for a long, long time, and people really aren't happy about it, as you can imagine. And everything came to a head in 1789. We've come now to the start of the physical revolution in France. So for this part, I'm just going to sort of read you a timeline of what happens, just the basic details of what's going on. Hopefully it won't sound too robotic, because I am reading it off a list in my notes so that I don't get any events muddled up or miss the dates or get it wrong. So sorry in advance. So we start in May of 89. The King of France, Louis XVI, he calls a meeting of the Estates General, which is kind of like a parliament made up of representatives from all three estates, and they're discussing the problems with France at the moment. The third estate obviously come in and they want the other two estates to pull their weight in terms of taxes and things like that. They are essentially ignored and actually physically locked out of the meeting. They call a break. The third estate come back, the doors are locked, they can't go in, they can't discuss it. So they name themselves as a separate national assembly, and on the 20th of June 89, we have a very famous moment called the Tennis Court Oaths, where the third estate meets to discuss the issues. They organise some protests for the third estate to take part in, particularly against the food shortages that are going on. A lot of the events in the French Revolution actually happen because of the food shortage, because that's how it starts. It starts as a riot against the food issues. During one of these protests, troops are sent to Paris. These are troops that are controlled by the king and the first and second estates, and they kill protesters from the third estate. This, of course, makes them so mad. And on the 14th of July 89, we have the storming of the Bastille. And that was a prison in Paris. Now, they claim that the storming of the Bastille was to free these political prisoners, but there were only actually seven held at the Bastille at this time. What was more important was the weapons that were in the Bastille for the third estate to arm themselves. After the storming of the Bastille, the third estate, now calling themselves the National Assembly, have essentially defeated the first and second estates, and they abolish the Ancien Régime on the 4th of August 89. Now, at this point, the idea was to turn France into a constitutional monarchy, essentially what we have in Britain. So there is still a king as a figurehead, and then we have the parliament that decide what's going on so that the interests of the whole population are considered, or at least that's how it's supposed to work. So there's no intent at this point to get rid of the king. On the 26th of August 89, there is the Declarations of the Rights of Man and Citizens, which was the underpinning document for the entire French constitution in this new order. There will be a lot of changes of constitution over the next decade or so, but this document, the Declaration, is very important to all of these constitutions, and it's from this document that we get the three words that are so often associated with the French Revolution: liberté, égalité, and fraternité. So liberty, equality, and fraternity. Things kick off again in October of 89 when there is a rumour going around that the wife of Louis XVI, Marie Antoinette, another very famous lady, she's hoarding grain in the palais. There's no real proof that these rumours were true, and Marie Antoinette certainly never said let them eat cake. That was not what happened. But the rumours were enough to spark a protest, and it was called the Women's March. The women march on the palace at Versailles and they demand the grain that they think is being hoarded by Marie Antoinette and the royal family. And this is where things take a turn to the radical, because the National Assembly, who are now in control, they send out troops to quell this protest. So in a dictionary sense, we have had a revolution because we've come full circle. The people who overthrew a government for suppressing a riot about food shortages have now become the oppressors of a riot about food shortages. And this really annoys a particular group called the Jacobins. And they are, again, members of the Third Estate, and they are a lot more radical than the National Assembly. They don't see the point in monarchy at all, particularly because they are heading an anti-Christian movement within France, which undermines the authority of the monarchy, because if God doesn't exist, then the monarch isn't ordained by God. So they're not really that important, and they're not as powerful as they would want us to believe. So a lot more radical, and they take over because they are unimpressed with what the National Assembly is doing. Over the next few years, the Jacobins and the National Assembly begin to radically change what French society looks like. They eradicate, as we've already seen, the Ancien Régime. They get rid of the titles of nobility in France, and they become a secular state. So there is a massive movement against Christianity and the monks and the clergymen in the country as well, so they really do suffer. And in 1792, they finally do away with the last remnants of the old France, and they suspend the monarchy, and the first year of the French Republic is announced. During this time, the French monarchy haven't been doing very well. Louis and Marie, they are moved around France by the National Assembly, who again at the beginning weren't anti-monarchy necessarily, but as it progresses and the Jacobins take over, it's clear that there is no need for a monarchy in this new society. And that's when Louis starts to panic and he tries to escape, he tries to run away, but he is caught. He and his family are all caught and he is taken to trial. He is taken to court and he stands trial for crimes against the French nation. And he is found guilty and he is executed in 1793. The rest of his family as well would be executed over time, and the execution of Louis XVI marks the start of, again, another phrase you might have heard of is the Reign of Terror. And this is the period of the French Revolution where anybody who is an enemy of the revolution is being executed. Thanks to the invention of a new device called the guillotine, executions are a lot quicker and a lot simpler. So hundreds of thousands of people are killed. The nobility, the clergy, monarchists, anybody who is seen to be an enemy of the revolution, like I said. At first, it is headed by a man called Robespierre. Again, you might have heard of his name. But just to prove how bloodthirsty the whole thing was, eventually Robespierre himself is executed as well, because as it goes along, it gets more and more warped and the reasons for execution are just insane. So many people are killed. And while all of this is happening, while there is so much bloodshed on French soil by French people, French troops are also getting killed in other countries as well. At this point, France is at war, particularly with Britain and with Austria. This is a period we call the Revolutionary Wars. So the French people really are just being decimated. They are being attacked from within and without. There is just so much destruction. However, all of this destruction and war and death does prove a good situation for a young soldier who rises through the ranks and eventually becomes the first consul of France, and that, of course, is Napoleon. And that is where I'm going to leave this timeline of the French Revolution. There are a lot of arguments about when the French Revolution ended, or even actually if it has ended at all, because the effects of it are still ongoing today. We can still see how it is changing the world to this day. But because the Napoleonic era is a separate situation in the world at this point, I'm going to stop our look at the French Revolution with the ascension of Napoleon to first consul. Now, as I promised, we are going to get to the Jane Austen connection here. Of course, as with the other historical events that we've already looked at in this little series, the effects of the French Revolution have a monumental impact on British society. So everybody is affected by the French Revolution in Georgian Britain. But Jane Austen and her family have a particular tie to the revolution. They are directly affected by it. First of all, Jane's brother Henry. If you remember back to our episode about her family, this is her fourth brother Henry. He joins the militia. He is based in Britain at this time, so he doesn't go over and do any fighting, but he is in the militia and is prepared to go to war with France. So there's that worry at the time. This, of course, does lead as well to other wars, which her brothers Francis and Charles would fight in as part of the British Navy. But the biggest impact to the Austen family of the French Revolution is for their cousin Eliza. Eliza, again, if you remember back to our episode on their family, Eliza is the daughter of George Austen's sister, Philadelphia. So this is Jane Austen's cousin from her father's side. Eliza, she grows up and she marries a French count. She becomes the Countess de Fried, which, very difficult to spell, very difficult to pronounce, so I'm sorry if I got that wrong. She marries this French nobleman, and she is living in France when the revolution starts to happen. She escapes. She is pregnant at the time, and she goes home to give birth. She goes back to England to give birth to her baby. So she escapes France, but she leaves her husband behind. And sadly, as part of the French nobility who were wiped out by this revolution, Eliza's husband is killed. He is executed via guillotine. So Eliza is left without a husband, and her child is left without a father. Now, truth be known, we don't know exactly what kind of a character the Count was like. We don't know if he was one of these authoritarian noblemen who really made his workers suffer. But whether he was or not, the indiscriminate executions of the nobility in France at this point is just insane. It is out of control. There is so much bloodshed, and it does directly influence Jane and her family. They are rocked by his death and the violent nature of it, and they are left without a family member. The French Revolution was a massive event in the 1700s. It was violent, it was bloody, and it changed the world. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Addicted Austenite. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, please do like and subscribe. And I love to get comments, so please do comment. I want to hear your opinions. I will see you next time for a new episode, and until then, as ever, happy reading. Your faithful servant, the author. Thank you.